A Stone's Throw from Despair, Robert Oppenheimer. After the return to Los Alamos, everybody seemed to be partying. With his usual exuberance, Richard Feynman was sitting on the hood of a Jeep, beating his bongo drums. But one man, I remember, Bob Wilson, was just sitting there moping, Feynman wrote later. "What are you moping about?" asked Feynman. "It's a terrible thing that we made," replied Wilson. "But you started it," Feynman said, remembering that it had been Wilson who had recruited him to Los Alamos from Princeton. "You got us into it." Wilson aside, euphoria was only to be expected. Everyone who had come to Los Alamos had come for a good reason. Everyone had worked hard to accomplish a difficult task. The work itself became satisfying, and the stunning accomplishment at Alamogordo infected everyone with an overwhelming feeling of excitement. In the process, even someone with as lively a mind as Feynman's was elated. But later he said of that moment, "You stop thinking, you know. You just stop." Bob Wilson seemed to Feynman the only one who was still thinking about it at that moment. But Feynman was wrong. Oppenheimer was thinking about it, too. In the days after the Trinity test, his mood began to change. Everyone at Los Alamos eased off on the long hours spent in the lab. They knew that after Trinity, the gadget had become a weapon, and weapons were controlled by the military. Ann Wilson, Oppenheimer's secretary, remembered a series of meetings with Army Air Force officers. They were picking targets. Oppenheimer knew the names of the Japanese cities on the list of potential targets, and the knowledge was clearly sobering. "Robert got very still and ruminative during that 2-week period," Wilson recalled, "partly because he knew what was about to happen, and partly because he knew what it meant." One day, soon after the Trinity test, Oppenheimer startled Wilson with a sad, even morose remark. "He was beginning to feel very down," Wilson said. "I didn't know of other people who were quite in the mood he was in, but he used to come from his house walking over to the technical area, and I used to come from the nurse's quarters, and somewhere along the way we often bumped into each other. That morning, he's puffing on his pipe, and he's saying, 'Those poor little people, those poor little people,' referring to the Japanese." He said it with an air of resignation and deadly knowledge. That very week, however, Oppenheimer was working hard to make sure that the bomb exploded efficiently over those poor little people. On the evening of July 23, 1945, he met with General Thomas Farrell and his aide, Lieutenant Colonel John F. Moynihan, two senior officers designated to supervise the bombing run over Hiroshima from the island of Tinian. It was a clear, cool, starry night. Pacing nervously in his office, chain-smoking, Oppenheimer wanted to make sure that they understood his precise instructions for delivering the weapon on target. Lieutenant Colonel Moynihan, a former newspaper man, published a vivid account of the evening in a 1946 pamphlet. "Don't let them bomb through clouds or through an overcast," Oppenheimer said. He was emphatic, tense, his nerves talking. "Got to see the target. No radar bombing. It must be dropped visually." Long strides, feet turned out, another cigarette. "Of course, it doesn't matter if they check the drop with radar, but it must be a visual drop." More strides. "If they drop it at night, there should be a moon. That would be best. Of course, they must not drop it in rain or fog. Don't let them detonate it too high. The figure fixed on is just right. Don't let it go up higher or the target won't get as much damage.